Hello and welcome to The Two Tones. It's episode 9. Tony Moclair and Tony DeBolfo. There's an old saying, Tone, you can't fall out of bed when you're sleeping on the floor. GWS.
If the floorboard's as low as we can go, Tone, I'll take that. But I hope we have bottomed out. Let's just say that. We couldn't find any greater depths to plunge, could we?
It was dispiriting. To me, it was like, if you're a fan of military history, it was like the loss of Stalingrad. It was like the German army. It felt like that kind of turning point. I'm not going to say we're going to end up overrun with Russians from the east and the Allies to the west. I'm not saying that our, the Carlton Football Club will end as ingloriously as that. I'm just saying it was a tiny bit soul crushing.
It is demoralising, no doubt about it. And I think we mentioned off air walking into the place and falling over two hang dogs, two pooches that are lying there in the front of the Carlton Cafe, and they were sort of howling. And I looked across at them and I know your feeling, brother. Yeah. It wasn't great, but that's I guess the mood of the place at the moment, isn't it? After no other way to describe it, Tone. Demoralising few weeks of football.
What? You can dissect it all you like. What essentially was the problem? I was trying to figure this out because you does your head in. Is it a question of coaching? Is it a question of players' attitude, their effort, their rate of effort? Is it, or does it go larger than that? It's a problem that's just the sum of many parts, I guess you'd say.
I think you're probably right in that respect, because if it was an isolated concern, you'd think that the problem would be fixed well and truly by now. But maybe it is a combination of a lot of things. And I guess when you see the team going, through the motions, the players going through the motions, it just, you can see that to a man, pretty much they're bereft of confidence.
Yep.
Now, why that's been caused, I suppose, is a conversation for wiser heads. But unfortunately, there just seems to be this pall cast over the place. And the players don't seem to be able to find a way through it.
You were near the players' race at the end of the game. Can you tell me about that?
Look, I understand how the members and supporters feel. The members, part with their hard-earned to see honesty of performance, and that's all they ask for, just honesty in the contest. And to see the players, have vitriol heaped upon them as they leave the game, within earshot of parents, players' parents who are standing there watching on, it's
would it surprise you if the parents were joining in?
No, I don't think that was necessarily the case. The players are the parents are obviously protective, but it is knowing some of the parents there and seeing some of the or hearing some of the abuse hurled, it's cringe-worthy stuff, and I do think that there are some people that go to the footy that actually make a sport of it, which is pathetic, really. However, I suppose the Carlton football team at the moment, indeed the club, is a soft target, and there's abuse, being hurled at it from hither and thither, and all we have is each other, Tone, and it's the only way to get through this, as one, all those cliches you'd like to trot off, and you just hope that this week, against Geelong, someone finds a way, because it just can't go on like this.
We probably have Geelong at a good time. They are suffering a fair few injuries. They are getting some key players back, though. But you would hope, given the history between these two clubs, given the fact that the last time we won a grand final, it was against Geelong, hopefully that might mean something to the playing group, this week could be the week where a statement, no matter how emphatic, but a statement is made.
Yeah, well, you always think back to that Hawthorn-Essendon game, was it, with the line in the sand at half time, well, that worked. I would love to see someone just, start a fight or show some sort of, heat
like James Kelly, literally bust a nut. That's what you want.
Well, that's all you want.
Yeah.
That's really all you want. And as I say, I think supporters by and large can cop a loss. they can cop an honourable loss. And you know, I used to say there's no such thing as an honourable loss, but I tell you what, I'll take an honourable loss at the moment because all I want to see is players coming off having, you know, had a crack and, you know, walking off with their heads high. Not too much to ask, is it?
No. Look, it's funny. When I take my my son to Tackers on a Friday night, I look around when kids are allowed to wear their own jumpers of football teams they barrack for. Now, I guess it's fair to wonder what kind of impact the current trough is having on the next generation of supporters. But at the moment, thankfully, there's still, where we live in, we're in Alfington, there's still a fair amount of Carlton jumpers there being worn by kids. And I hope that's the case for many years to come.
Well, I'm heartened to hear you say that because I was thinking back to the A-League final, Melbourne Victory versus Sydney.
Yeah.
And I made the comment to someone that I suspect the... our generation of supporters you will still see at Etihad and where Carlton's playing, but I suspect the second, third, the next generations of Carlton supporters were probably over the road at Amy Park watching the Victory go through their paces. So, you know, this is a real concern for the club, you know, because our next generation of supporters are our most important, and well, they've got to be given something to, you know, connect with, and the club really has to find a way to reconnect with those, you know, lost supporters.
Well, I'm sure everybody who follows Carlton has their own theories as to the best way to turn things around here. I'm not going to go into ours at the moment, but it was interesting watching Mick, who I think has been showing a lot of grace under pressure, and he was very keen to make the point on the CarltonFC.com.au that you can be as pissed off as you like at him, and that's fine, he'll wear that. But it's about getting behind the playing group at the moment and getting behind the club more than anything and supporting it, putting bums on seats and just cheering for the old Dark Navy Blue, getting down to Etihad Stadium and... willing the guys on, I guess, as much as possible.
I agree, Tony. And it's easy to support the team when they're up and about and flying. And and I suppose for we supporters, we have seen successful times and we remember how good they were, you know. And so we're prepared to wear a bit of pain, a lot of pain, as it's turning out. It's a lot harder for you know, younger supporters to have to take this, you know. And, you know, what was it, 95, our last premiership? Well, you know, I remember that as it was yesterday. But, you know, again, you know, I have a boy, 14, that hasn't seen a premiership and doesn't know what it means. So this is the issue the club faces, you know, with in trying to at least, you know, work on its young membership to ensure that, you know, supporting Carlton is the way to go.
Or at least, you know, we just, I guess, want to see the emergence of a roadmap towards... premiership glory.
I think that's a fair point too. You know, I think if supporters can see a way forward and a pathway, and they understand the direction the club's heading in the journey, I think they'll buy into it. What they'll also buy into is the youth of today that are you know, going to be resident Carlton players of tomorrow. You know, we take all we can when we see fellows like Cripps playing, you know, Levi Caswell, you know, it's great to see him, you know, pulling in those clunkers and kicking straight. And right now we're grateful for small mercies like these, but you know, you take it every day of the week. And I think if we continue to turn over our young players, well, that is the future, you know, and that's what you want to see, I think.
Yeah, and just a side note to that, Tone, if Eddie Betts, Kennedy, Jiffy and Jared Waite could just stop kicking goals, we'd all feel a lot better.
And don't forget Mitch Robinson, three.
Thank you. Three?
A lazy three, so put him
down
for
kidding?
Three.
Oh, holy hell. Mitch, come on. That's a knife in the heart. Anyway, let's draw a line under that particular questioning and conversation, Tone, and let's preview Geelong. As I said, they've got some key players coming back. They've got Tomahawk coming back. Let's be honest, our defence is not great.
No, but I did like your call on the game that, you know, let's adopt the buster nut philosophy going into this one. Why not? You know,
exactly.
Pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, just let's leave body parts on the park.
Absolutely. You know, bring nothing back into the rooms after this contest. Let's see, you know, 100 minutes of solid grunt and grind. You're right. You know, we've pushed Geelong pretty close in, you know, recent meetings, haven't got over the line. I mean, I think I can still remember that Riccardi goal that, you know, the Wiggler undoubtedly touched that sunk us there. But look, you know, we do match up well on Geelong.
Yeah.
So what we'll get, who knows? Let's just see how it all pans out on Friday night, Tone. But you'd like to think, you know, you're going to get at least a more honest performance from the Carlton 22.
Because, Tone, you remember last year there were I don't want to go off tap here, but there were just two really stupid free kicks paid against Carlton, against Geelong, in tight finishes that resulted in us losing. There was Menzel not getting a free kick where he was virtually decapitated in the goal square. Nothing to us there. And, of course, you remember the other one.
Well, the Christensen one where, you know, the free kick was paid for a brush over the shoulder. It was given around the neck.
And yeah, it was on his bicep. It was nowhere near his shoulder.
Yes, and you know, Christensen partied like it was 1999, as they say. And, I mean, it was a Mickey Mouse decision that was unfairly rewarded with a goal that won Geelong that match. So, we do have long memories. And we've been on the wrong end of a few. And, look, let's hope it doesn't happen again. But, you know, unfortunately, sometimes things tend to go that way when you're up against it. We hope that's certainly not the case Friday.
Well, yeah, Christensen?
Yes.
I guess he got the free because he was a man in front, but that's maybe the way to play. I don't know. But that was horse poo. We were sunk as a result. And like you say, Tone, hopefully it won't happen on Friday night.
Eddie Carrott's moving into the umpiring fraternity will hopefully balance the ledger, Tone. Well, you noted that this week?
No, I didn't.
Andrew Carrazzo expressed thoughts of pursuing a career in umpiring following Jordan Bannister into the fraternity, so which is an interesting call, isn't it? Wouldn't have picked
Carrots
to have gone that way, but there you have it. He obviously wants to maintain an involvement in the game, beyond his playing career at Carlton, a great career it's been.
Exactly. He's got a few mouths to feed as well. Let's not forget that.
He has.
So, good luck to him. So you get along there, I guess it's what we're saying, Friday night, 7:50, Geelong Carlton. Let's talk about players, Tony DeBolfo, that have played for both clubs.
Yeah, well, Ray Byrne, Ray Byrne we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, great Carlton player, I think one of the Bendigo League exports. Was a very serviceable wingman for the club. Unfortunately, he crossed to Collingwood, and which, if you look back, probably cost him three premiership appearances through the late 70s, early 80s. That's,
I'm sure that's never crossed his mind.
Then you've got Alan Mangels. Now, Alan Mangels, good hard-nosed on-baller for Carlton through the 70s and early 80s. Alan Mangels, I'm pretty sure, was somehow related to the great Bob Chitty.
Okay.
I think on his mother's side there was a Chitty connection there. And, of course, Bob Chitty, you know, was the ferocious Carlton captain through the years of the bloodbath.
Yep.
Jim Francis, you know, when asked how tough Chitty was, replied, "Don't hit Chitty with your pickaxe, you'll blunt your pickaxe." Chitty stood about 5'9", and was built like a bull. And Alan Mangels, in many respects, was a hard nut. Ended up Geelong briefly, and I think he went north. I reckon he might have followed his career up in Queensland, where he still may well be residing to this day.
Okay.
Dennis Lenigan, the Lenigans, he had a brief run at Carlton through the early 1980s as well. Probably unlucky that, you know, there was an abundance of riches of, you know, talent there at the time. The Mosquito Fleet was up and about, and he probably couldn't get a look in. Rod Waddell, one of our Indigenous players, would love to know where he is these days. Haven't been able to locate him anywhere. Football journeyman, I think he had a run at Collingwood as well, and then followed his football interstate up the coast, I think. Mario Bortolotto, well...
Well, you know, come on.
Talk about right place, right time. You know, you always remember... David Parkin relates a great story about the 82 Grand Final where he instructed his players if one of our fellows is roughed up in 82, have a crack at the bloke you're standing on.
Yeah.
And Mario Bortolotto followed it through to the letter, I'm pretty sure, on David Cloke. David Cloke didn't know what hit him.
Yeah.
But Mario, I think, played a dozen games or so, amongst them the premierships in that great back-to-back era.
If you don't mind.
If you don't mind. David Clark, great Geelong player, who you may recall in 82 ran out with Frank Marchesani before the 82 Grand Final, then ran up the race again. They Parkin kept them guessing.
Oh, smart.
Right to the end.
Yeah.
But imagine that. You're there. You've got your Carlton Guernsey on its grand final day. It's, 20 to 3 minutes before the first bounce. You run out with the team knowing that you're going to be running off and not being a part of the biggest day on the football calendar.
Can you do that these days? I don't think you can. Sure, can you? No, you've got to have the team list lodged and
exactly right. Crossed and he did that with Frank Marchesani, and both of them never played in a Carlton premiership. But I would contend that is as close as you could ever hope to get playing in a grand final. To actually run on grand final day and then run off.
The great Sonsu tactics of David Parkin. Now the next name on that list, Tony DeBolfo, will live in eternity.
Well, people are often asked of that. We talked about 1995, of that era. You know, you speak to players of the era, who was the best player in their time at Carlton, and to a man, they'll volunteer Greg Williams.
Yeah.
What a player he was. Kicked 1-4 in a practice match here in his first stint that then saw him shunted away from the club.
He was too slow, wasn't he? That was the whole...
That's right, too slow. He ended up at Geelong. I've spoken to Greg Williams about that particular practice match, and he goes on the record as saying, I've often wondered what might have been if I'd kicked 4-1, not 1-4 in a particular game. But how lucky was Carlton to get him back?
Yeah.
You know, when you think about it, it could have been horrendous. He was lost to Sydney forever, but the timing was right.
I remember my brother's excitement when he was drafted back, when he came back.
He
was, my brother Peter's fanatical, had a spring in his step.
Yeah. You know, with Williams, Tone, I always remember, if you're sitting in the stands watching him play, you're miles from the action, so you've got an overview of the game in its entirety. And for the most part, you can see or you can anticipate where the ball is going to go. He was right there, and he was doing things that, standing from afar, you couldn't anticipate or expect to see happen.
Yeah.
And you sit there thinking, how did he do that? Or how did he see that? You know, Williams, the thing with Williams was his peripheral vision.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about Williams was that yes, he had that deficiency in leg speed, but the players to a man supported him and covered for him because they knew that when he had the ball, he was just so damaging with his use of it. So, we talk about, the team things and so forth, and Williams was an absolute football genius, don't get me wrong. But, the team to a man, I guess, brought out or helped bring out the best in Williams, and they were able to cover him, when he might have been up against it.
Which wasn't often.
Which wasn't often.
Because he was just phenomenal to watch in full flight.
And fiercely competitive too.
Yeah.
They never gave a backward step. Great. One of the great players.
44 touches in a game, no Brownlow vote. Anyway, let's not dwell on that.
Thank you, John Russo.
Thank you. Yes. All right. Now, another player who is dear to my heart, Justin Murphy. Holding the ball at the end of 1999, the prelim final.
An indelible memory that will live with me forever, Todd. Wasn't that a beautiful bit?
Yes, it was.
And, of course, on the interchange bench in the Geelong Guernsey when Milburn decked Silvani.
And would not sit next to him.
At Milburn.
Moved down the end of the bench. I love you, Justin Murphy. Adrian Hickmott, what a great player for the Carlton Football Club.
You know, I think of Hickmott, we talked recently about Heath Scotland, great servant to Carlton he was. Well, Hickey I'd put in the same, bracket as Heath Scotland. Just a totally honest footballer that gave his all for the club. If memory serves, he was one of the better players afield for Geelong in the 95 grand final.
Oh, okay, yeah. And so was Riccardi. He had a good game that day.
Yeah.
And there weren't many to choose from.
There weren't many. And obviously, it influenced Carlton's thinking and going for Adrian Hitmott. I think nowadays he's involved as a assistant coach or a development coach, still in the industry, which is great to see. Great fellow around the place too.
Yeah.
Really good man.
Right, loved him. Michael Mansfield.
And Stephen O'Reilly.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, well, you go. Well, they both came from Geelong. David Clark Jr.
Yeah. David Clark Jr., son of, obviously, had a brief stint here at Carlton also. Yeah, he was involved in an incident with an umpire. Do you remember that one in a club game, wherever it was, where he limped down behind the field umpire as he was propping back? You know, the field umpire.
Yeah.
I don't know, it was deliberate ploy to...
Really?
You know, the old practical joke.
Yeah.
But no one was laughing, Toad, so no. I think he got weeks for that.
Well, as many as Greg Williams got for simply brushing past an umpire.
Well,
we had to take to the Supreme Court.
The umpire was in his face. I mean, what was he supposed to do? I mean, that was outrageous.
Yeah,
that 9 was weeks, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Please.
Unbelievable. Andrew Carrazzo.
Well, you know, the great man who... It was remiss of me not to mention, Tony, that I believe today is the 10th anniversary of the last game at Princes Park.
How about that?
And Andy Carrazzo, I am pretty sure, is the last Carlton player to complete his senior debut on the ground. So
now that is something.
Yeah, so Carrots was Carlton through and through, is Carlton through and through. Family had a presence in Lygon Street, the area, for many, many years. You know, migrant family came off the boat, settled in Carlton. Andrew Carrazzo was at the 1995 grand final, so remembers, you know, albeit fleetingly, the grandness of the moment. Has been a loyal servant through and through. Was involved in the trade for, let me think, Davey at Melbourne.
Okay.
I think they were both sublisted players, if memory serves. And I think, I don't know if it was a trade or we took, I think Melbourne might have taken their player first, Davey first, and then Carrots. I'm not sure of the mechanics of that, but what a great servant he's been for the club.
Yep. BNF as well.
Yeah, BNF, John Nichols medalist, a great player and loves the club, you know. May there be more of his ilk.
Exactly. Although, you may not be saying that in 5 years' time when he's an umpire and
giving
freeze against
that is very,
great
very
club.
True.
Well, we hope not. No, you're right. Great servant of the club. And it was exciting having moved back to Melbourne from Adelaide, spending 2 years there. And there was a school fair up at St. Anthony's in Fairfield. And took my little man along. And there was... Carrots.
Oh, he Carrots was there.
I think one of his nieces, I think, goes to that particular school. So I was always excited to get a photo of Rafe with Andrew Carrazzo.
I love hearing those stories, Tone, because players don't get enough acknowledgement for the work they do in the community, and it means everything to a little fellow like yours, you know. And I've always said, Tone, that when you're a little impressionable kid, you'll remember if a player signs your autograph.
Oh, how true
that
is.
And you'll remember if they don't sign your autograph. And as a kid, you stamp that player's papers. You know, you never forget those things.
I'm looking at you, Wow Jones, Bill Jura, 1978.
He'd be mortified if he knew that, Tony.
No. I'm pretty sure he did. I just remember how big he was, how many tattoos, and how fruity the language was.
Yeah, well, anyway. I remember my first autograph was Ricky McLean, who was probably one of the most fearsome footballers God ever put breath into. And he was coming off the track here at Princes Park. This must have been about 68, 69. Dad took me to the club, training had ended. And he was walking off with Bob Edmund. Jimmy Edmonds' brother, who ended up a Commonwealth Games weightlifter. Big men, big hulking figures, and McLean was ferocious, you know, fearsome. And I tentatively asked both for their autographs, and they gave me their autographs. And years later, I bumped into Ricky McLean in a cafe in Gisborne, of all places. And I said to him, "You won't remember this moment, but you gave me my first autograph." And I said to him, "You got a raw deal in your career. You were an absolute gentleman." And he was taken aback, and he was quite chuffed to know
good on
that
you.
He had that impact on someone. So there you go. That's how many years ago is that? 40, 5 years ago, 46, but you don't forget those things.
No, it's a great thing to do. Now, we're going to round off the list of players who have played for both clubs, and then they're going to tell you something. There's a couple of things that we're going to cover off there, Tone. Jeremy Laidler.
Well, Jeremy Laidler, you know, he had a all too brief career here at Carlton, didn't he? Looked promising as a halfback flank, yeah. And obviously he's carrying on his good work at the Swans. I was there to see Jeremy leave, you know, but good luck to him. You know, pursuing his new career at in Sydney.
He seems happy up there, last interview I read with him.
Yes, and his father, I think, was a very good cricketer here for Carlton also, in another life.
No worries. Now, a couple of things before we get out of here. Juddy, AFL Life membership.
Well, you know, and you know, all power to the man. You know, when you're watching Carlton go around these days and you see Chris Judd, you know, well, you just know that he couldn't give Carlton any more.
The man is a colossus.
The colossus. There's no better way to describe it, Tony. He will have probably by the end of the year notched up career game number 150 for the Carlton Football Club, which would put him on a par with Mike Fitzpatrick, another great West Australian, premiership captain, Rhodes Scholar, been a great player for the club. As I said, Chris Judd couldn't give Carlton any more, and this is a once-in-a-generation player. Mm. You know, you don't see his like, you know, too often. And thinking back now to 2000, you know, that first period of the 21st century, you would have to say he was the preeminent footballer going around in the game. And as I say, one of the greats, one of the true greats of the game. And aren't we lucky that he played for us?
Still pinch myself a bit that seeing Juddy in the Carlton jumper. I know that sounds weird given how long, you know, like you say, he's going to end up playing 150 games here. But, you know, I know that every Carlton supporter wants to see his last season being better than this.
Yes, yeah, very true. He deserves to go out on a better note, that's for sure. And it only seems like yesterday, Tony, 2008, that he walked into the club. And I can remember sitting in the old Elliott stand where the football admin area originally was, and it was at the time that he was courting all of the clubs, Melbourne, Collingwood. And we were standing there, and he came up from the car park underneath the grandstand where we were, and we saw the great man walk onto Princes Park, and it was a glorious moment in time. And the other thing I do remember was the day that the press conference was called.
Yeah.
And it was in the, I think, the John Nichols room on the third floor of the social club. And I was on the second floor. He was coming up, and now Jeff McClure, the late Jeff McClure, whose daughter Madeline worked here for a period, was on the step with a Carlton Guernsey and a texter. And Chris Judd wrote his signature on the jumper, and underneath it he wrote, "You're the first."
And do you know who has that jumper now? Madeline's brother, Sam McClure at 3AW.
Guard it with your life, yes, Sam. It will be worth anything. And the funny thing, I don't want to put Juddy down, but,
no.
but he actually spelt your Y-O-U-R, not Y-O-U apostrophe R-E.
He was, there was a lot going on, right?
I think we should tip him into that and get him to go back there with a texter just to, just to tidy up that very small error.
You've got to get past Sam and Madeline first, so good luck with that. So congratulations to Chris Judd, AFL Life membership. Worth cracking, I would say, cracking open one of the finer bottles of whiskey that he has in the man cave there to celebrate that particular milestone.
Absolutely.
And on behalf of all of us who are red-blooded, we hope that it's accompanied by some sort of formal ceremony that will require Beck to wear a nice dress.
Yes. That sounds like a very, very fair thing to say.
Thank you.
Speaking about scotches, Tone, I sorry to butt in, but I should mention that on Tuesday, I actually met here at the club John Menzies, the nephew of Sir Robert Carlton's longest serving Prime Minister. And the influence of the Scotch he made jogged my memory that he talked about how Sir Robert, in his days before PM, would walk on a Saturday afternoon, presumably when Carlton wasn't playing, for miles and miles from Eltham or Templestowe, Warrandyte area, to to John's family home in Kew. And he said he'd arrived in a lather and he'd sit down in the armchair, and John will relate the story that my mother would get him it was whiskey in there, and it was called a Southern Buster, and I've seen there are recipes for it on the web. And he said, so to us, you know, he was known as Southern Buster Bob.
Wow.
Which is a great story. And I've got a few little anecdotes from that John related about his memories of following Robert Menzies here in the Bentley.
Yeah.
And I'm hopefully going to be reporting those reminiscences on the Carlton Football Club website very soon.
Before we go, Tony, your book, where can we get copies of it?
The website, Tony, it will be available. I think sales are going okay. We could, a win would help, no doubt about that. And I'm still ploughing through the writing of it. I've been under the pump a bit. I've been at home in the cave, head down, tail up, putting together some anecdotes for the book. So we're getting towards the end. So fingers crossed those who love Carlton will really, enjoy the experience of ploughing through this book.
Not only that, but the reprint, because there will be a reprint, will have the entire Australian Transport Safety Bureau report on the crash of Captain Carlton's hovercraft. So that will be required reading, Tone.
It was actually nice to see Captain Carlton in the rooms after the game last week too. I don't know what he was doing there, but there he was, you know.
Was he not copping a bake from Mick, I hope?
He was, you know, I was thinking about it. He was wearing his mask.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, geez, a mask would be handy down here at the moment. You sort of don't want to show your face, you know. There you go.
Well, look, hey, let's celebrate the long hoped for win against Geelong with a, what was the whiskey concoction enjoyed by Bubba?
Southern Buster.
A Southern Buster. Hopefully, Friday night, a win against the Cats. A noble enemy. I've always liked Geelong. I've always liked beating them more, of course. So, we hope to celebrate with the Southern Buster on Friday night.
And two of the three oldest clubs in the competition's history, Tony.
Well, there you go.
1850. 1860 Geelong, 1864 Carlton. So the Pivotonians versus the Carltonites.
There we go.
Let's see what happens.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for your company today, Tony DeBolfa and Tony Moclair of the Two Tones, saying go Blues, and we'll catch you next week.
Go Blues.